The 20th Century Fox Temple and logo appear, cornered by four spotlights sweeping the sky. 20th Century Fox presents a CinemaScope picture, Seven Thieves. An overhead view of a roulette table and wheel appears, soon followed in the wheel's centre by a scantily dressed girl dancing. Faces of the other main players appear around the edges of the wheel before a 500,000 franc chip is pushed onto number 26. Further chips are placed on top, identifying the names of the actors in the film: Edward G. Robinson, Rod Steiger, Joan Collins, Eli Wallach, with Alexander Scorby, Michael Dante, Barry Kroger, Sebastian Cabot, Marcel Hilaire, and John Berardino. Screenplay writer and producer, Sidney Bohm. Director, Henry Hathaway. Based on a novel by Max Cato. Music by Dominic Frontier. The scene of the Bay of Cannes captures the sweep of the sandy beach, swimming jetties and pontoons, the broad palm-fringed promenade, the road lined with parked cars, and behind that, the rows of cafes, bars, shops and hotels. Parasols are crammed together on the beach as children paddle at the water's edge. Two, a boy and a girl, show an elderly man dressed in a trilby hat, shirt, bow tie and rolled-up trousers shells that they have collected. A male interrupts him from the promenade.
Look at this, Mr. Wilkins.
Look at this, too.
Oh, wonderful, mademoiselle, wonderful. You know, a very fine example of the Sol Redua family.
Looks like a plain, everyday snail to me.
Paul! Oh, I'm sorry, my boy. I meant to meet you at the hotel.
Hotel's an elegant word for it.
Yes, true, but the food is edible. Oh, Mademoiselle Claire, Mr. Sandy, this is my very dear friend, Paul.
Hello.
You know, long, long ago, we also used to collect seashells.
Here?
Oh, no. Far away, on Cape Cod, in America.
Do you still collect seashells, Mr. Paul?
Not lately.
Well, until tomorrow. Goodbye.
Hello there, Paul.
Oh.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
4 years older. 4 years more than I can afford. Sit down.
Why'd you send me the plane ticket to you?
Well, I thought you might enjoy a change.
The rest? Oh, I just finished resting for 3 years, remember?
Yes, I remember. I wanted to see you again.
I don't believe that.
Why not? An old man should have the occasional privilege of gratifying himself.
I have very few friends. Nobody closer than you. You know that, don't you, Paul?
Mm-hmm. Why'd you send me the plane ticket?
What's happened to you? You used to have those treasured gifts. Patience, silence.
I lost them resting. Well? Well, I get it. In other words, I'm supposed to shut up and wait and see, right?
In other words, please. How about a drink to our reunion? Hmm? Come on.
He and the white-suited man stroll across the road to one of the pavement cafes.
Yeah.
Monsieur? Merci. Et qu'allez-vous prendre?
Do you have any ice?
Naturally, monsieur. We have a large American clientele.
Un chocolat et un whisky and soda with ice.
And chocolate, whiskey, soda, with ice. Yes.
Now, an international accent. Madam says whiskey is an Englishman. Madam says double whiskey is an Irishman. But the man who asks, have you any ice, is an American.
What about the man who says chocolate?
Me?
You're the sound Einstein. A man kicked out of a seat of higher learning into the gutter.
Well, let's not indulge ourselves.
Yes, you're right. But it still hurts a little when I sit down. Yeah.
The waiter delivers their drinks, then Paul scans the tables around the cafe. He sees a smartly dressed middle-aged woman with a white poodle sat beside her on a chair, eating from a bowl on the table. Then, a man dressed in beret and sandals, with a young woman wearing a striped top, Alice band, and smoking a cigarette.
You know them?
Who?
Who? The beatnik and his dressed for the occasion girlfriend.
Oh, they're usually together.
All right, come on, Theo, give.
Well, things aren't that simple. I want to prepare you, lead you into it.
I haven't got time to be led. I'm down to my last $5 worth of francs.
But it doesn't matter. Things are going to be different now. Believe me, Paul, there's no reason for you to feel depressed.
Why should I feel depressed, eh? Why? Any day now, the French police are going to look in my pass and find out I just finished a 3-year vacation and I'm in town on your charity. But why should I feel depressed?
Well, you've just been unlucky, that's all. But that's all over with. You know what they say about luck.
I know, I've heard it before.
But it bears repetition. It grows like apples on trees.
If you reach it long enough, it's there to be plucked.
That's right.
I know it's right. You sang me the same song in New York. You sang it in London, Cambridge, and Tangier.
Yes, but only this time our reach will be precisely right.
Well, can I ask you one question, please? Why? Why did you send for me?
Will you wait? Wait just a few more hours, please.
The man in beret and sandals catches his eye and nods to him before standing up. He and the girl leave the cafe as both Paul and Theo watch their departure.
What did you bring me here to be looked over for?
Well, forgive me, Paul, but they insisted on seeing you for themselves.
Well, look, do me a favor. Just lend me enough money for a ticket home.
Well, I can't. I've saved and scraped for years. Every franc that I put together and what the others have added is spoken for.
Those two?
Three others. Join me, Paul. I'm surrounded by strangers. I need one friendly face. Do you stay?
No. Let's just say from one friendly face to another.
For now.
The scene changes to the grand facade of the Monte Carlo Casino, and then the interior with its marble floors, chandeliers, and gaming tables. Paul and Theo, in evening wear, sit at the bar.
Usual, Doctor?
Yes, thank you, Adolf. Oh, and whiskey and soda with ice.
Oui, monsieur.
I see they all know you here, Doctor.
More important, I know them. Look around you, Paul. You're in the Temple of Midas, the Holy of Holies. See all the worshippers of the golden calf.
Everybody's rich, but they want to get richer.
Even as you and I. Would it stagger you to know how much money passes across these tables?
Anything over $5, it'd stagger me right
now. Just think of it, Paul. Whose money is it? Where does it come from? Tax-deductible expenses? Excess dividends? Rents paid to absentee landlords? Oil money to men who never got a fingernail dirty? Who became rich on the sweat of...
You're overdoing it.
Oh, yes, a level.
Nobody forces them to gamble.
No, not physical force. But the casino preys on human weaknesses. Midas has to be fed with money. He has an insatiable stomach. You know where this golden stomach is kept?
Mm-mm, and I don't want to know.
Two floors below, in the vault.
You stop talking like a lunatic.
You know, there's a philosophical viewpoint to all this. Casinos, bawdy houses, insurance companies suffer from the same injustice. Whenever anything happens to them, whoever shows pity?
I don't know, but I don't want to stick around to find out.
Not even for 1/7 of $4 million?
1/7 of $4 million? Oh, stop dreaming. I mean, it can't be done.
Yes, Paul, it can. I tell you, it can.
Oh, no.
Paul gets up and walks to an ornate embroidered divan, and Theo follows him.
Yes, Paul, yes. Think of all those doors at home that'll swing open for you. Money will do it.
Will you forget it? Look, I've done things that got me in trouble in the past, but I'm not a professional thief.
Please. Don't even suggest such a thing.
Then why are you acting like Alice in Wonderland? I mean, what is all this? This is strictly legal?
It's a piratical exploit. Yes, precisely that. A dramatically unique venture on piracy.
Look, I don't care what you call it. It can't be done.
I tell you, I planned this as I would a chemical experiment. Years I've known it couldn't happen without the proper ingredients, the right temperature, the right spark to set it off. But now, suddenly, all the conditions are right. With a little daring, the experiment can be made to work.
No dice. I pass.
Paul arises and goes back to the bar for his drink, trailed by Theo.
Now, please, please, Paul, don't refuse me. You're the man I need, my vital ingredient.
Why me?
Well, I can trust you. Without you to lean on, I can't afford to risk all those strangers. I'm too old to stop them from freezing me out. You want that ticket back home?
How many strings attached?
My boy, when will you stop suspecting my motives?
When you stop conniving. How many strings?
We go back to Cannes. At midnight, after you've heard me out, you still hold to your opinion about the insanity of this experiment. The ticket is yours.
No other strings?
None. And no hard feelings. Either way, my boy, my affection for you will never change. To midnight.
Next is the Le Cave nightclub. A female contortionist performs her act on top of a raised platform on the stage to the music of a small band, as patrons drink, watch, and chatter. A waiter pours drinks for Theo and Paul.
That's vinegar.
Yes, but with bubbles.
Well, I think I'll try the whiskey.
They water it.
It's a fine spot to have a talk. It's 10 after 10, Theo.
You know, you make things very difficult, my boy. I can feel your antagonism.
Not antagonism, it's caution. I cannot understand why you're so hell-bent on doing this thing. I mean, is it money, or you want to be rich in your old age?
You know me better than that. Paul, I have to accomplish something before I die. I want to make the world gasp a little. I want to finally put the cork on the bottle. Can you understand that?
Must be some other way, Theo. I mean, you can always go back and work in your own field.
Under what name? Who wants to hire a scientist called thief or an ex-convict? Once you're labeled, it sticks for life.
Move over, my friend. Make way for my label.
Well, that's why you should understand. There's only this last experiment, this last chance for me.
The act finishes, curtains close, and audience applaud.
They're all here now, aren't they?
The last one is just sitting down.
What's he staring at?
Nothing yet. He's anticipating.
I've seen that anticipation on faces in every back street in the...
He stops as the curtains open again to reveal the young woman in the striped top from the cafe. This time, she's a scantily clad dancer.
It's the one this afternoon.
Yeah.
Who's he?
Raymond LeMay, executive secretary to the director of the casino.
She's not exactly his society. Where'd you find her?
Fanshawe. The saxophone player. He brought her here from London some years ago.
Mistress?
Of course not.
Oh, no, of course not.
You don't understand. It couldn't be like that. Pancho is a veritable Mother Hubbard.
Pancho, the saxophonist, is the man who was with her in the cafe. He now plays on stage as she gyrates.
It's something new in Mother Hubbard's.
Raymond LeMay watches in fascination as the girl, Melanie, incorporates almost balletic interpretations into her dance. The audience are really warming to the act, her wiggles, lithe movements and beauty generating excitement and appreciation. Raymond purses his lips and wrings his hands in controlled lust as she responds to the urgings of the saxophone. Beads of sweat appear on the bespectacled LeMay's brow. The rest of the band swing to the music as the performance comes to a climactic end.
In some peculiar company.
Well, in an experiment like this, we take human beings as we find them. Why be interested in their private lives?
Because it can be important.
Yes, but advantageous too.
Now in a thin dressing robe, Melanie joins the besotted Raymond at his table.
There's nothing that Raymond would refuse to do for Melanie. Here she comes. Now, please don't be antagonistic. At least for now, anyway. Mm-hmm.
Sit down, my dear.
I only have 20 minutes before the next show. Thank you.
Your boyfriend's leaving.
I know.
Why is he so upset?
Your presence, I think. You even upset the professor.
But not you.
No, Mr. Mason. Not me. May I have a little champagne?
Certainly. Be my guest.
You're very kind.
She drinks, then pulls cigarettes from her now slightly open robe.
You're embarrassing the professor.
Oh, I'm sorry. One gets so used to exposure on the floor, but it isn't very pleasant in company.
Some company.
Some company.
Tell me, has LeMay said that he's ready to go all the way in this deal?
Well, not in so many words. But the idea is very appealing, and the money is a strong temptation.
It's kind of a package deal. Money and love.
Yes, Mr. Mason. Raymond believes he's in love with me.
Now, don't you have any conscience about setting yourself up as a man trap?
No, Mr. Mason. No conscience. It doesn't exactly fit with this job. Or the drunks that I'm paid to tease.
They tell me there are other ways to make a living.
Oh, they tell me that, too, every night. The little boy men, the misunderstood husbands like Raymond who come here to sit and stare and sweat.
Pretty bitter for a girl.
Not bitter, Mr. Mason. Just tired.
May I join you?
Yes, please do.
Your niece and I have been discussing things.
Melanie is not my niece.
Well, let's not fuss over the right word. Don't you want to invite over the rest of your happy family?
You know the others?
The last 15 minutes they've been playing the I'm not really looking at you, it's the other guy routine. That wolf character at the bar with the house girl, he's been romancing her with one half his face and watching me with the other.
Well, unfortunately, cheap women distract Louis Antonisi.
What about your muscle boy at the bar? He looks like a member of the secret police.
Ugo Bauma, an excellent counterbalance for Louis.
Yes, he's an expert driver mechanic and fearless, Paul.
Well, what do you say? Are you satisfied with us?
Mr. Mason hasn't agreed to anything.
Why not?
Because it has the smell of insanity.
Daring, not insanity. All we need is to gamble with higher stakes than the casino is used to. And to have faith in each other.
Cemeteries are full of people who had faith.
Obviously, Professor, your friend is a very nervous man.
Oh, my friend, that is the understatement of the evening. I am worse than nervous. You know something? Glib, positive characters like you scare me.
Don't underestimate me, Mr. Mason. I'm not a fool. I measure danger only in terms of profit. If the reward is great enough, I accept the risk. In fact, if it were not for the money, and if you were not essential to the professor, I would even do something about your ugly manners.
You had no right to needle Pancho.
It's just my way of finding out things. Theo, I think Uncle would stand straight when the going gets rough.
I'm sure he would.
Well, what about the others?
You could keep the others just as straight.
He glances at each of them in turn and then addresses Theo.
Well, you better tell them that things aren't as angry here as it seems.
Paul, is it yes?
No, it's just maybe, Theo, just maybe.
Well, I'll tell them. We'll meet tomorrow at Patrick's apartment.
Do you mind if I stay for your next show?
If you want to.
I want to.
Okay.
It's late now, and in a backstreet hotel room, Paul and Theo study a detailed floor plan of the casino using a magnifying glass.
And do you show the whole layout?
Every inch of the casino. Photostats of the original blueprints.
It's courtesy of Melanie's boyfriend.
Yes. Here's the room where you gambled this afternoon.
What's this, the floor above?
It's the grand ballroom. And right next door is the governor's private apartment.
He lives there?
Only on special occasions. Now, this is the private elevator that leads to his bedroom. It goes down to the director's office, right off the salle privée.
Mm-hmm. And down to both basements?
Yes. Straight to Midas himself, the vaults. One solid year of planning. Each step of the way thought out.
Except for some of your friends, they may not stand up under the pressure.
Well, you can put iron in their legs.
They may not like the way I do it.
But they have no choice. I control all the funds. $9,000. Without you, I step out.
Let them take over and find a new bankroll?
No, I'm not that old-fashioned. I've given them the ingredients for the experiment. All the ingredients. Except one. How to safely walk out of the casino carrying $4 million worth of francs.
Still contemplating, Paul stands and moves over to the window.
Do it, Paul. Will you gamble on me this one last time?
I don't know. I don't know, but it's almost daylight and I'm still around.
My boy, you've made me very happy. Everything now is complete. So absolutely complete.
Easy. You're still a long way from making the world gasp.
In the morning sunshine, Paul pauses by a street market and looks at an address on a scrap of paper.
Merci, mademoiselle.
It's Melanie shopping at one of the stalls.
It's tough trying to get used to your different faces.
I'm the same person.
Well, that's what confuses me. May I?
He takes her bag of groceries and they walk down the street towards her home.
I don't understand, worry.
I'm easy to understand.
Only at night, this domestic routine is different.
Why? Isn't a woman supposed to be domestic? To shop and cook and clean?
Not with legs like yours, she isn't.
Do you mean that as a compliment?
What else? Didn't your boyfriend Raymond ever suggest that?
Suggest what?
Well, that with legs like yours, there's no need to slave over a hot stove.
Yes, Mr. Mason. Raymond and others have made many suggestions.
Raymond's the only one that ever got a yes.
You have a nasty way of asking questions.
Well, in my country, people can refuse to answer on the grounds that it might incriminate them.
But this is France, and there's another way. One merely looks the questioner in the eye and says, "Mind your own damn business."
Now, out of sorts, she opens the apartment door and walks in, leaving it slightly ajar.
Where's the professor?
He's collecting seashells. Can I trouble you for a cup of coffee?
He re-enters the living room and casts his eyes upon the rest of the gang. Hugo stares at him suspiciously.
Full face, all right? Would you like to study my profile, too?
It's a tight collar and muscles. He can't turn his head.
Is it that my face annoys you?
No, but since I might become a member of the family, I'll try to get used to it.
You're joining us?
Let's say the professor's convinced me I'd like to be rich.
Why didn't the professor come with you, then?
Well, we thought there were some things I had to say that might embarrass him.
What things?
Questions and a change I've made.
You have made a change?
That's right, Fritz. I have made a change.
My name is Hugo.
It's okay by me. You quit staring and I'll quit jabbing. Thank you. Professor tells me that you're a good safe man.
The best.
Blasting?
A technician, not a coal miner.
I'm happy to apologize. Now, what about the vault?
Antoine Pelissier installed in 1928. An outer grill of 2 centimeter steel bars. Double combination locks, interconnected tumbler pattern.
You sound like you made a close study.
The closest. I worked for Antoine Pelissier, building the heavy boxes until last year, when I decided to go into business for myself.
Mm-hmm. And once we're inside, how much time do we need?
About 30 minutes.
30? You got 60. Maximum. How much time you need before you quit your job?
Musicians come and go without too much excitement. But Melanie must give at least 2-3 weeks' notice.
No, 1 week will have to do. We need all the rehearsal time we can get.
But why? We've almost 2 months.
Not anymore, we haven't. We're going to make it the 10th, the night of the governor's ball.
You're crazy.
I think you'll all find out that Mr. Mason has a rather weird sense of humor.
Not when it's my neck, I haven't. Now, look, that's the one night, no matter what the weather is, that the casino's going to be too crowded and too busy to look for our kind of trouble.
But the ball is by invitation only.
Well, Raymond will handle that. I'll talk to him tonight.
He should be here any minute.
Oh, he won't. I told the professor to hold him off.
Why? Raymond is committed.
To whom? To Melanie? That's not enough. I want him in this thing deep. I want him right up to his ears. Now, getting the invitations will help, but until we're positive, no more visits. I hope this doesn't interfere with any of your plans.
Not at all. We can always make other arrangements.
I believe the change is sound. I approve.
Me too.
You?
I agree.
Melanie?
I speak for Mademoiselle.
Always?
Yes, Mr. Mason. Always.
Okay. Let's get something else straight. From here on in, no matter what happens, there's going to be one voice, just one, mine.
But it's our necks, too.
That's right. 7 necks, one voice, mine.
What if we reject the idea?
I walk, and the professor too.
And you think this will put an end to it, that we could not go ahead by ourselves?
Where to? The Bastille?
No, no, excuse me, just 1 minute, Hugo. Obviously, the professor's told you how he intends to remove the treasure from the casino.
Obviously.
And we're to know none of the details.
Not till we walk out with the money.
Well, then you're quite correct, Mr. Mason. As far as Mademoiselle and myself are concerned, we accept. One voice.
Why not?
I agree.
Good. That puts us in business. Coffee, anyone?
Raymond looks longingly at Melanie, who is performing a different routine. Using a chair as a prop, she lounges seductively and plays with her hair to the slow intro. She then bursts off the chair and goes into an upbeat dance before settling into a sensuous sway, which emphasizes her bare back and long legs. The crowd love it. Melanie leaves the stage and joins Raymond at his table. She indicates Thea and Paul as Raymond looks over at them, nervously.
Now he's frightened. You'll have to treat him gently.
Like a baby?
Now be careful, Paul. Remember how essential he is.
Yes, Doc.
Paul gets up and leaves Theo to join Melanie and Raymond.
It's time we met.
This is hardly the place for that.
Well, maybe you'd rather talk at the casino or at your home.
I don't like that kind of humor, monsieur. A man in my position must be careful.
Like being here every night.
I will not be spoken to in that way.
Then stop acting like a prima donna.
Raymond,
I don't need an interpreter. The professor's waiting for you.
She looks over at Theo and reluctantly leaves the two together.
Good night, Raymond.
Until tomorrow afternoon?
Yes, at the apartment.
Did she tell you about the invitation?
It is impossible. The director himself, he personally inspects the guest list.
We should have no trouble. We'll just take the best names he's ever read.
No, it is too dangerous.
Listen to me, mister. We're not playing a make-believe game of cops and robbers. And you're going to have to take the same risk all of us take.
But Melanie has assured me...
Please, do me a favor, will you? You just save Melanie assurances for the apartment. I'm not Melanie.
To be careful, to give this change in the plans a little more thought.
Okay. Give it a little more thought.
Thank you. I'm certain
you have
that
about
in a few
30
days...
seconds.
Raymond looks perplexed and uncertain, whilst on the bandstand, Pancho looks anxious.
Make up your mind or go home to your wife.
Wait. I always intended to go in.
What does that mean? I mean, exactly, is it yes or is it no?
Yes.
I have to have something more positive. Look, I have to be sure that you're dependable.
Look, I will try, monsieur. This affair, it attracts and it frightens me. As you see, I'm not very... Monsieur, I'm not a brave man. But I give you my word. I will try to do whatever is necessary.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the invitation.
There it is, Melanie. A $4 million agreement. All is well with us.
At the Franco-Belge garage in Vontachat, Paul meets up with Hugo, who is working under the bonnet of a Rolls-Royce.
Looks like something an eccentric millionaire would use. The only question is dependability.
I'm as sharp as a razor in a few days.
Okay. Let's pick out another.
We want something cheap but fast.
Over there, at Citroën.
An old ambulance pulls up outside a small hospital, siren blaring. Paul and Hugo watch from across the street, sitting outside a small cafe.
It's a war surplus four-wheel drive.
Can you pick up one like it?
Of course. With the same hospital markings, it would be identically the same.
Hugo works on the black Citroën's engine, whilst Paul paints a coat of arms on the door of the Rolls-Royce.
Baron von Roelitz himself would not know the difference. Both cars will be ready for the rehearsal tonight.
At exactly 82 minutes to the city marker.
The black Citroën containing Paul, Melanie and Louis approaches Monte Carlo.
All right, Louis. How's it go?
I get off at the side entrance to the hotel, walk to the lobby and take a taxi to the casino.
Don't hurry. Make sure you give yourself the full 15 minutes.
Hurry? Well, I look so elegant.
Louis walks towards a large hotel reception area whilst Paul and Melanie continue to the casino, where they sit at the bar having a drink. LeMay walks around the tables, hands behind his back.
He sweats like this at rehearsal, he'll pass out the night of the ball.
You worried?
Do I look like it?
A little.
Maybe I'll let myself get out of practice.
Louis enters the casino.
There isn't any reason to worry. I'm sure everything's going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Who's going to guarantee it? You?
No. It's just that a woman has feelings about people and things. I have every confidence in you.
You know what you remind me of? In Tangiers, there was a bartender. His name was Mambo Charlie. Now, he used to make a cocktail, and this cocktail was as sleek as satin. But there was just one thing wrong with it. About 2 hours later, it snuck up on you and wished you were dead.
I'm like that bad cocktail. Is that why you dislike me?
Did I say that? Now, you have to be conscious of people to like or dislike.
And you're not conscious of me.
Isn't that Pancho's private department?
Why didn't you just come out and ask me what you really want to know? What am I to Pancho, to Raymond, to the others who come every night and sit and stare?
Okay. I'm asking.
So that you can call me a liar? Are you any different from any of the others? Could you believe in the morals of a woman whom you've seen almost naked?
No comment.
Pancho has looked after me since I was a little girl. Ever since my mother died, she was a school teacher in London.
No, hold on. Just a second now. Do you think that I would come in on something like this without checking up on you, all of you? Your mother was a stripper. Your father worked backstage. He left a week after you were born, and a month later your mother followed.
Makes you very happy to call me a liar, doesn't it? Is it so wrong to make up a dream? To try and give oneself a background of decency?
No. I'm sorry.
A little, maybe. The way you'd say I'm sorry after bumping into somebody on a dance floor.
No. Listen to me. I meant it. I am sorry.
Then I'm glad. Now, let's not have anyone talk about bad cocktails or my past or my morals or even my legs. Mm-hmm. I think the professor's due.
Mm-hmm. Paul leaves some banknotes on the bar and they walk off together, Melanie looking extremely elegant in a long white dress, chiffon shawl and her hair swept up onto her head.
On schedule.
Monsieur, monsieur.
Good evening. Will you be good enough and take Baron von Roelitz's wheelchair out?
Yes, monsieur. Felix, bring Monsieur Seymour.
No English is a call. There's no need for coincidence.
Pardon,
no,
pardon.
I'll set my man
out. Coat of arms works wonders. The more abuse he hands out, the more service he'll get.
Where's the real Baron?
Venezuela, being wheeled around his oil fields.
Your pardon.
This is an honor and privilege.
I'm a doctor. Never mind this speech. Just step aside. Doctor?
Yes, sir. We're ready, Baron.
Hugo?
Hugo extracts the wheelchair from the car, and Pancho, posing as Baron von Roelitz, is lifted into it once he has secured its fittings. Theo is accompanying the Baron as his personal physician, Dr. Vital.
Pancho's a pretty good actor.
He's rehearsed for that all his life.
My medical clinic, please.
Yes, doctor.
Will you take it in and set up a comfortable place for the Baron of Roulette?
Immediate.
Thank you.
Hope he remembers he's only posing as a millionaire. Otherwise, we'll lose our bankroll the first rehearsal.
Not Pancho. He has a reverent respect for money.
Casino staff carry the wheelchair containing Pancho up the entrance steps.
Ah, it is an honor to play host to Baron Emile von Roelitz.
Why am I required to meet all the help?
Well, this is the Director General himself, Monsieur Flournoy.
Very well, then. Good evening, Herr Director. Now, step aside.
Now, irascibility is not going to help your blood pressure. Now, I'm just going to allow you 20 minutes of play, no more. And which way, gentlemen?
The center table.
Oh, thank you. Will you please have a table by the Baron with a carafe of water?
Come on. It'll take me some time to find out if the veal is honest.
I think he's overdoing it.
Did you ever hear of a millionaire being thrown out of a casino because his manners were bad?
A man whispers to a croupier, and a space is cleared at the roulette table for his wheelchair.
Oh, yes, please, right over here. Have the bag. Thank you.
Louis joins Paul and Melanie, who are watching the table.
It's a low limit table.
Where do you expect an oil millionaire to play?
Maybe he'll win.
No, only the rich ever win.
Excellency. Let's look over the rear terrace. You first.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, s'il vous plaît.
I'll test them with a few small wagers. Change me 1,000 Rax marks.
That isn't very much of a test, Your Excellency.
Don't teach me my business.
Oh, 10 plaques for His Excellency.
On the terrace, Louis looks nervously over the balcony and sees a long sheer drop to the sea and rocks below. He then looks up at the rest of the floors of the towering casino as Paul and Melanie join him, sensing his anxiety.
Those are the ballroom windows, not the governor's apartment.
His place is around the corner overlooking the garden.
The same ledge?
That's what the blueprint shows. Go through the last window, and then we'll work our way around to the bedroom.
Right on it. That's narrow.
It's 2 feet wide. That's not so narrow.
Looking up bothers me.
That's still the way we're going in.
Oh, I'll be all right when the time comes. Just looking up bothers me.
Yeah,
huh? I better go inside.
Your intuition still tell you this thing will work out?
It still tells me to have confidence in you.
It's gala night at the Governor's Ball. Fireworks light the dark night sky as Paul and Theo arrive at Pancho's apartment and ring the doorbell.
Evening, Melanie.
Hi. You're the first. Excuse me, I have to start dressing.
Where do you do your dressing, in the hall?
Hardly. It's more comfortable in my room.
Oh, you've got your own apartment.
I thought you never started a job like this without knowing everything about everybody.
Smiling, she turns and walks away to her room.
I made up three, but one is all you'll need.
I wish there was some other way.
There isn't. I'm certain that the ingredients are precise.
Cyanide? A precise amount of cyanide?
Yes, the precise dosage. No more. You will regain full consciousness, all your faculties, within 80 minutes. I'm certain of that.
You can afford to be certain. Worst thing that can happen to you is you might have to go to my funeral. I know what you're thinking. This is a fine time to start worrying. It's the nearness of things that frightens me.
You want to call it off?
It's the door of death. Taking hold of the knob. And not being quite sure of coming back.
You can be sure. There's no margin for error. It has to be bitten open and then swallowed.
No, wait, please. I need a moment to compose myself.
Pancho. You welch inside the casino and Lewis and I will be trapped.
I won't welch.
Well, turn around. I want to see you say it.
I'll go through with the arrangement. Well, you can depend on it.
That's exactly what we'll be doing all the way.
Pancho goes into his room as Theo answers the persistently rung doorbell.
Fine night for nobody to be home.
Where's Pancho and Melanie?
They're dressing.
Hey, where's the brandy, Pancho?
Skip it. Coffee's your limit tonight. Just sit down and relax.
How can I? If I try to sit, I'll stab myself to death.
Now, shall we run down our timetable?
I've got 7:13.
Precisely.
Yes.
We arrive at the casino at 9:37.
Then I drive back to where the ambulance is hidden.
We start for the vault at 9:40.
The Baron has his attack at 10:35.
Now look, sticking to the timetable is all important, but if anything unexpected develops, anything at all, just ignore it and keep right on going.
Nothing unexpected, please.
I still have to put petrol in the limousine.
I will go.
Yes.
Haven't you forgotten something?
Me?
Yes. Long ago, when we first met and talked about this venture, I pointed out something of great importance. The difference between a prison offense and the guillotine. The difference between robbery and murder.
Murder?
Yes, murder. That gun under your belt.
I don't intend using it. It is a necessary precaution.
Put it on the table.
Why? What if I'm stopped driving the ambulance?
If I have to take it away from you, I'll jam it up your nose.
All right. If all of you are willing to go through this night without protection, so am I. Here.
Hugo puts his gun on the table and leaves.
If I had any sense, I get on the plane, I get out of here.
No, Paul, no. We're only hours away from fulfillment.
Sure.
Paul, where are you going?
You take it easy, Theo.
I'm with you.
Remember? I'm just going next door to Melanie's and have her put away this guillotine piece.
Women in beautiful ball gowns and elegantly dressed men alight from their limousines at the base of the casino steps. They enter the ornate interior where their invitations are checked.
You will find His Excellency there.
Monsieur Alfonso et Mademoiselle Cristina de la Cruz. Mr. John Edwards.
De la Cruz.
Mademoiselle et Monsieur de la Cruz.
Enchanté, mademoiselle.
Delighted, mademoiselle.
How do you do? Delighted.
C'est un plaisir, monsieur.
John Edwards.
Monsieur John Edwards.
C'est un plaisir, monsieur.
Having passed scrutiny from the governor's reception committee, they enter the ballroom where couples are dancing to a small orchestra.
I've got butterflies crawling all over my guts.
Keep thinking of your chalet and your 4 or 5 girl house guests.
I'm trying. But a drink would help. Only one, Paul, I swear.
Okay, but nurse it. We've got 22 minutes to kill.
What do we do about our butterflies?
We dance.
They take to the floor, whilst outside, Hugo, Theo and Pancho arrive as the chauffeur, Dr. Vital and Baron von Rurlitz.
Please be careful with the Baron's new chair.
Yes, Doctor, of course.
Organist, organist!
Step aside! Pardon, step aside. Pardon, Excellence!
Ungeschickte Gackerl! Take your germ-ridden hands off the chair!
Pardon, Excellence, pardon.
As Pancho continues his performance as the irascible Baron, Paul, Melanie and Louis move away from the bar towards the window the two men are to exit from.
We're in the casino.
Drink in hand, Paul looks at the closed window as Louis and Melanie arrive behind him.
Window.
Yeah.
Give us 2 minutes, then close it.
Paul.
I will.
Very careful.
Very careful.
He kisses her gently on the lips, then joins Louis at the now opened window.
It's a mile high.
It's all clear, let's go.
Now, wait a minute. You, then me.
Paul climbs out onto the narrow ledge, the cliffs dropping vertically to the Black Sea below.
Come on.
Pardon, madame, the draft.
How dare you! Look what you've done to my gun. You make a habit of bumping into guests.
I'm sorry, but madame is mistaken.
Are you suggesting that I spill things on myself?
No, certainly not. Madame will return to the lounge. The maid will be happy to repair the damage.
Never mind. Instead, bring me another glass of champagne.
In a moment.
Not in a moment, now. And when I get a breath of fresh air, I'll close your precious window.
Yes, madame, of course.
Melanie apprehensively looks outside as Paul and the nervous Louis inch their way along the ledge to the corner of the building. Paul has to almost pull Louis along the ledge as Melanie closes the window. Now, on the side elevation of the building, Paul and Louis edge towards a small iron balcony, where Paul urges Louis to use the equipment he carries in his waistband to open the balcony doors. The window latch is eased open, and Paul tentatively looks into the casino director's office. First he enters, and then Louis, who scans the room with the beam of a small but powerful torch that he has brought with him. They spot the lift, and Paul presses the call button as Louis closes his eyes in trepidation. They slide the wrought iron gates back and enter the lift. Paul pushes the level button, and the lift starts its descent, Louis still displaying signs of high anxiety. The lift arrives in the vaults, and beyond a small office area stand the vault gates. Beyond them, the safe. Louis shines the torch on a light switch, and Paul, using a handkerchief, turns the light on. They approach a table, taking in all the security features, and Louis opens his jacket to place his equipment on the table.
Electric eye alarms all over the place. It's 18 inches clear under the lower beam.
They take off their jackets and pull on white cotton gloves. Louis removes the shoulder-supported drill holster he is carrying, then the strong broad leather belt holding all the tools. He lays it out flat on the table, whilst Paul plugs the drill into a wall socket. Worried and surprised by the noise, he turns around to see if anyone might have heard it.
Rien ne va plus. Le numéro 1, rouge, impair, passe, première colonne, première douzaine.
In the casino, Pancho is playing roulette as Theo looks around for the appearance of Melanie. He spots her and she nods at him. Signal given, she goes back upstairs, and Theo detaches his pocket watch and places it on a table beside Pancho, where he can see it clearly. Downstairs, Paul and Louis slither on the floor below the electric I-beam and start the job of drilling through the barred vault gate. In the ballroom, Melanie goes to the bar and takes a seat, where a balding elderly man wearing civil decoration orders her a drink.
Champagne.
The Veuve Clicquot for Mademoiselle.
Very well, Excellency.
I'm certain that you will find the Veuve Clicquot an excellent drink.
Thank you.
Excuse me, haven't I seen Mademoiselle before this evening?
No.
The barman delivers her drink as His Excellency scrutinizes her carefully. Uncomfortable and feeling she has been recognized, Melanie picks up the champagne and walks away. As she does so, watching her departing derriere, His Excellency taps the bar in realization of where he has seen her before and follows her.
The stage, wasn't it?
I beg your pardon.
Where I saw Mademoiselle? The stage, hmm? The Cellar Club in Cannes.
Cellar Club, don't be ridiculous.
Oh, you needn't worry, Mademoiselle. If you are here with me, the Duc de Salins, there can be no embarrassing question.
You are the only embarrassment I have run into this evening. My husband will be here in a minute, and he has a very strong prejudice against sensuous, bald-headed old goats.
Affronted and cross, His Excellency strides over to the casino director's table to complain. Melanie, by a small marble table, observes his actions.
I think it's degrading and outrageous for this girl to be here.
Of course, Excellency. Monsieur le Maire.
Yes, monsieur.
That young woman sipping champagne. His Excellency says she's a chief cellar club dancer.
But your Excellency must be mistaken there.
I'm not. I'd recognize her anywhere.
Naturally, we cannot afford a serious mistake. But if His Excellency is correct, and I'm certain that you must be, then that woman has some motive in being here. Well, jewel thief, blackmail, something sordid. Tell the chief of detectives I want him at once.
Yes, sir.
Your Excellency, perhaps you would care to join us,
please. Thank you so much.
LeMay leaves, but skirts over to see Melanie.
It is all over. We are finished. They know who you are.
Keep your voice
Look,
down.
You have to leave right away. The director has sent me for the chief of detectives.
Stop getting hysterical. Stop it. Now you know I can't leave. That window has to be opened again so that they can come back in.
No, no, you will be arrested and questioned. They will find out that I'm involved. Melanie, please don't do this to me.
To me? Are you all that counts? Doesn't leaving them out there on that ledge matter to you?
But you can't help them. No one cannot anymore.
I'm going to go into that powder room and I'm going to wait until it's time to open the window. And you're going to delay getting the police as long as possible. Now remember, Raymond, if anything happens to any one of us, it happens to you too.
She shrugs his hands off her shoulders and goes into the powder room. Meanwhile, in the vault, bars have been removed and they are now drilling the safe door lock. Drilling done, Louis takes a small hammer and a chisel-like tool and starts to hammer through the drill hole. He hands the tools to Paul and inserts a flexible light probe, then, with a small pick, turns a tumbler.
Three more to go.
He looks at his watch. 7 minutes past ten. Hugo, driving the ambulance, does the same.
Oh, Excellency. Some time for your medicine.
Pancho looks at the pill apprehensively, whilst in the vault another tumbler clicks open. Probe is withdrawn and wheel handle replaced on the door and spun. The safe opens effortlessly and they start to take out metal boxes of cash, which are placed on the floor and jemmied open by Louis to reveal neat bundles of 10,000 franc notes. In the casino, Theo gives Pancho the cyanide capsule and pours him a glass of water. The terrified Pancho places the capsule in his mouth, but refuses to bite down on it.
Your medicine, Excellency. Bite it, get caught. I won't let you hurt him, I won't.
Realizing he won't do it, Theo takes a small syringe from his bag containing the same dose and injects it into Pancho's neck. A startled Pancho falls from his chair and to the floor, where Theo attends to him.
Call someone in authority. His Excellency's had a heart seizure.
Oui, monsieur.
He picks up the capsule that has fallen from Pancho's mouth.
Excellency. Excellency. Excellency.
We will assist you in removing him.
No, not yet.
I am sorry, doctor. He must be moved. It is a rule.
Do you have the authority to jeopardize the Baron's life?
Paul slips a bag of money through the bars to Louis, who places it beside the others already collected. Then Paul slides below the bars on his stomach.
Is he ill?
Yes, seriously. I need a quiet place, somewhere nearby.
There is only the director's office.
No. An alcove downstairs, perhaps.
Sir, do you refuse the Baron the use of your office?
Very well. Keep the removal discreet.
Yes, in the chair, please. My bag.
Pancho is loaded into the wheelchair and taken towards the director's office. Downstairs, jackets are replaced, bags lifted, and an exit made by way of the lift. When it reaches the director's office, the solid inner doors open, and they stand behind the wrought iron gates. Hearing the director's voice, they reclose the inner door.
This way, gentlemen.
This way.
Will you put him on the divan, please?
Excuse me. Yeah. Carefully, very carefully. That'll be all, gentlemen. Thank you.
With Pancho now on the divan, Theo takes out his stethoscope and listens to his chest. He shakes his head sorrowfully, looks around the room, and then goes to a telephone as a knock on the door interrupts them.
I'll attend to this myself.
The director goes to the door and talks to a tall, elegant man whom he then invites into the room as LeMay looks desperately towards Theo, who beckons for him to be calm.
This is Sir Gerald Halsey. Sir Gerald is a London physician.
I hope you'll forgive me, sir. I was close by the table when you mentioned a heart seizure.
Yeah?
Frankly, I was puzzled.
Perhaps trouble's a better word. There was an odor of... Well, there was an odor of bitter almonds.
Yes, of course. Cyanide. I am well aware that my patient poisoned himself.
But you diagnosed a heart seizure.
Well, did you expect me to make an announcement like that to the patrons?
Oh, the casino appreciates that, Doctor.
There's no reason for your casino to suffer a scandal just because my neurotic patient tried to do away with himself.
Well, that may be so, but I fail to
understand... I'm sorry, Doctor, but your curiosity will have to wait for a more opportune time. The director will show you out while I telephone for an ambulance.
You object to my presence?
Object?
Why should I object?
The casino is not interested in being discreet. I certainly am not.
But we are, very definitely. Oh, please, Sir Gerald, this way.
Listening inside the lift, Louis and Paul breathe a sigh of relief as Theo telephones Hugo.
This is Dr. Vidal. I want you to send an ambulance right away to the casino at the side entrance, away from curious eyes.
Yes. Be certain it's the side entrance. Thank you.
You are very thoughtful, Doctor.
No, not at all.
Tell me, Doctor, why does a man like the Baron do such a thing?
Because he was constantly sick. Because his body was a painful burden to him.
He was?
Yes. Mercifully, he's dead. Death is not as ugly in the dark. It'll be less depressing if we wait outside.
As soon as they're gone, Paul opens the lift door and turns on its light. They both then re-enter the office and quietly load the money sacks into a compartment below the raised seat of the wheelchair. Paul pushes down and compresses the money so the seat fits back down neatly and securely before they get back in the lift, close the doors and switch off the light. Paul mops his brow with his handkerchief. Soon they hear a signal, leave the lift and go over to the doors they originally entered through. Louis sees the drop below and once again becomes fearful. He dashes back into the office and Paul goes back in after him, grabs his arm and forces him through the balcony door in front of him. They start to edge along the balcony, Paul holding the back of Louis's jacket and Louis with his arm around Paul's waist. They edge painfully along to the corner of the building, moonlight reflecting on the dark waters ahead of them. A slightly protruding corner block forces Paul to let go of Louis briefly, who cowers back against the wall, before Paul grabs his jacket and pulls him along. Once around the corner, he has to do the same again as Louis freezes. They're now nearing the window they left the ballroom by. Inside, Melanie has left the powder room and walks towards the window, but is spotted by the old man who recognised her earlier.
There, that woman going toward the alcove.
Paul pushes at the window, but it's shut tight.
Go back. Stay here.
Melanie takes a glass of champagne from a waiter's tray and goes to the window, puts her bag and drink on a chair and tries to open it, but is proving difficult. She's being trailed by the balding man's companion, who is approaching the corner around which she has finally managed to open the window. He challenges her by a marble column.
I beg your pardon. Is madame here without an escort?
That's extremely insulting.
I must insist on a reply. I'm in charge of the casino's police. Is madame here alone?
Of course not.
Then I must ask madame to take me to her escort.
Which one? Madame has two escorts. Which one of us would you like to see?
Neither, sir. This intrusion is an unfortunate error. Madame was mistaken for someone else. I beg your pardon. All your pardons.
You two dance your way to the door and then get out.
He takes a sip from Melanie's champagne glass before placing it on the column ledge, then walks across the ballroom to the grand staircase, where he descends the steps down to the casino. He spots Theo, the director, and LeMay standing near the doorway. LeMay looks extremely anxious. Paul then looks over gambler's shoulders at the table and lights a cigarette.
Raymond, get hold of yourself. You're attracting attention to a problem.
I'm sorry, monsieur. I feel ill.
Tragedy affects some of us more deeply than others. I have a suggestion which may reduce your problem. Wouldn't it be more discreet to move the Baron to the side entrance right now?
Much more discreet. Tell the commissionaires to bring a stretcher to the office.
No. The stretcher attracts attention. But if the Baron is strapped firmly into the wheelchair, no one will pay any particular attention.
Of course. Bring the help.
Outside the side entrance, the ambulance has arrived and the doors opened. Between rows of gamblers, the Baron is transported from the director's office in his wheelchair. He attracts some curious glances, but not too much of a stir is created. The director unlocks the side doors, and the Baron's chair is lifted down a few steps and wheeled towards the ambulance.
Ram down, please.
The ramp is lowered and the Baron's wheelchair is rolled into the ambulance.
I'll go with him and make out the death certificate. Heart seizure.
You are most considerate, Doctor. My deepest thanks.
No. On the contrary. If the Baron could, I'm sure he would want me to thank you for your consideration.
They shake hands, and Theo gets into the back of the ambulance with Pancho. The ambulance is now driven by Paul, with Hugo sat beside him. As they proceed along the road, the black Citroen pulls out behind them as Hugo smiles broadly.
We made it, Paul. We made it. I told you we could. I told you.
Who's arguing?
I'm a happy, happy man.
How's Pancho?
As expected.
He looks dead to me.
He'll be conscious very soon.
Theo, sweating, undoes his bow tie and top button as the ambulance pulls into an off-road area where the Rolls-Royce sits. Hugo pulls off the medical disguise as Paul in the ambulance continues after the Citroen, the Rolls-Royce close behind.
That one loose end. The perfect experiment. I can hardly wait till the morning. The radio, the newspapers. We sit back, you and I, Paul. Listen to the world gasp a little.
I'm glad you made it, Theo.
Yes, I know you are, my boy. But hearing you say it means more to me than anything else. We'll reopen those doors now. All the doors. Every door I had slammed in your face.
Take it easy. You know, we're not home yet. Just sit back and try to relax.
Whatever you say, my boy. It feels good to be able to relax. Once you finally put the cork on the bottle.
They drive along the coastal road back to Cannes on a clear night, bathed in moonlight.
Half hour to go.
Theo doesn't respond, but strapped in the wheelchair, Pancho is beginning to revive. He looks at Theo, who lolls back against the side of the ambulance, a smile set on his lips and his eyes closed.
Professor?
Welcome back, Baron.
I realize I showed weakness.
Theo falls over on the side seat.
Professor? Stop somewhere quickly. Something's happened to him.
Paul pulls off the road, and Louis notices through the rear screen mirror.
They turned off.
Paul races to the back doors, opens them, and climbs in as the Citroën pulls up behind. Paul lifts Theo towards him, cradling him in his arms. He tilts his chin up and realizes the truth of Pancho's statement. His face contorts into a mask of grief. He cries and kisses Theo's head as Louis and Melanie get out of the car to be met by Pancho and Hugo.
Sitting there, smiling, asleep. He was sitting there, dead.
Paul!
Paul emerges backwards from the ambulance, Theo in his arms. He looks at them, tears streaming down his face.
Over there, those woods are thick enough to hide him. What are you doing?
Don't you... You can't put him in there.
Paul puts him in the Citroën.
This car can be traced.
I'm going to take him back to his hotel.
You're crazy. You can't.
Don't you touch him.
You keep your hands off him.
You stay with him, Paul. I'll drive.
Hugo goes back to the others as Paul and Melanie leave with Theo's body.
I hope you realize what's going to happen. They'll be looking for us as soon as he is found.
I doubt it. A man his age has a heart attack in his own bed. It's not unusual enough to investigate.
I still think it's dangerous.
But profitable.
What?
Dividing the extra shares an added asset.
The car pulls up outside the Backstreet Hotel. Melanie gets out and goes to open the hotel's double door as Paul checks to see if the coast is clear before lifting Theo from the car and dragging him inside. Melanie recloses and bolts the doors. As dawn is breaking, they drive together in the Citroen. Paul, now in suit and tie.
I think I envy him. He was happy when he died.
Envy the living, not the dead.
I used to believe that. I used to believe that having enough money would let me be born again.
Maybe it will.
No. No, it won't. I learned that a little while ago in his room. I looked at him, lying there, peaceful and happy. I looked at him and I thought, the professor's lucky. He's never going to have to hear anybody call him thief.
It wouldn't make much difference. Been called a thief before. Been called a thief. And he was called a hero. It's all in my suitcase. The story of his life. Diplomas. Medals. Newspaper clippings.
I wouldn't have believed anything bad of the professor.
He should have been around 12 years ago. He would have been one of a minority. Everybody walked out on them then. Even before he went to prison. All his colleagues, his friends. Even his family took a different name.
You liked him very much, didn't you? Is that why you became involved in this?
I loved him.
He was your father, wasn't he?
Paul solemnly looks straight ahead as he drives, his silence acknowledging the fact that the professor, Theo, was indeed his father. Melanie puts her hand over his on the driving wheel, and he places the other over hers. They arrive at Pancho's apartment and talk briefly about the money before ringing the apartment buzzer.
You sure?
Very. Not one sou.
And they'll love us for that. Huh? You only have to cut it up four ways. We're back.
Well, did you manage it?
Yes. Now, wait. Now, let's do this right. Mademoiselle, monsieur, I'm about to show you the glittering marvel of the century. $4 million worth of francs.
Laid on the table in all its glory is a large pile of bundled notes. Louis and Pancho sit down at the table and then talk about Raymond's share.
We were discussing Raymond, the size of his share.
Pancho, you can't.
Don't worry. They won't.
Raymond gets 1/10 for his share.
Isn't all this enough for you?
Considering the small part played by Raymond, 1/10 seems like a generous gesture.
Speaking of gestures and the parts we each played, I think the professor would like you to have that as a souvenir.
He places the syringe and cyanide capsules in front of Pancho.
I say Raymond gets a full share.
He picks up bundles of notes, then stops as he realizes something.
No. The time for one voice is over. We make now our own decisions.
You're wrong again, Fritz. The decision's been made by the Bank of France.
What?
Dear, read them and weep. That's the hottest money you ever touched in your life. Every one of these is a big bill. Every one of them has been serialized and listed by the Bank of France.
They pick up the bundles to check.
Don't look at me. The label, it's dated. This money was printed and recorded only 2 days ago.
Marks to him?
All the money in the world.
Surely not all.
And I can't spend it.
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Hold on. Stop it. I mustn't behave this way. You help me pick up the money. Please. We must be rational. Think things out. Please.
What's going to happen now?
No, they'll probably talk and argue. Divide the money and promise to keep it out of circulation till it's safe.
But they won't.
They'll probably wait a week or two. Look, here's the last of our bankroll. This will get us maybe as far as Rome.
And then as soon as one of them is caught, he's going to implicate all of us.
We'll just have to try to make ourselves hard to find, that's all.
You might be able to alone, Paul, but not with me.
Let me worry about that. Just pack.
Raymond is going to be the first one that'll talk if they question him.
We haven't got time to worry about Raymond.
Not for him, Paul, but for us. How we're going to feel later on because we didn't worry.
Okay, then we'll warn him now. That's the best we can do.
I think that we can do better than that. I think that we can give the money back.
You mean we're just going to walk in and say, Mr. Director, excuse me, please, it was all a big mistake. Here's your money back?
I don't know how, Paul. I only know that we should try. Please. Somehow.
Paul opens a drawer and takes out the gun and clip he took off Hugo.
It's the only logical thing to do. We'll hide the money for a month or so, then exchange it a bit at a time.
Who does the hiding?
We'll put it in my trunk and then store it.
No.
You know I can be trusted.
No.
All right, then move in here with me. The storage receipt will be here and we can all watch each other.
No.
How can we solve anything? All he keeps doing is saying no.
No, he's right. Suppose you have an accident. Drop dead or something. What good is the storage receipt to us?
That's sound logic, Louis.
We divide the money now and take our chances.
You're still trying to make decisions, Fritz?
You're out of this!
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm right back in. All right, Melanie.
Melanie enters, carrying a case.
Now, look. There's only one way to solve our problem.
The casino doesn't want any scandal, and they're not going to complain if we return the money.
What?
No.
Yes, now, we're not going to serve time in prison so you can have 2 weeks to drool over this stuff.
Now, it goes back!
They all stare, grim-faced, at Paul, the suitcase, and the money. As Paul opens the case and he and Melanie start to pack the money, Hugo backs furtively away. Hugo moves behind Paul undetected and tries to club him from behind, but Paul's too quick for him.
Paul!
Take it easy.
Don't move. We're back where we started. One voice. I'll fill it up. Come on, fill it up. You too, Fritz, off the floor.
Oh.
Come on. Melanie, you get your things, bring the car around to the door.
Melanie, after all these years, is this the thanks you give?
Melanie looks at him, then turns and leaves.
Keep going.
At the casino, Paul and Melanie play the roulette wheel.
Faites bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, s'il vous plaît.
Faites bonjour.
Faites bonjour, mesdames et messieurs.
Les jeux sont faits. Rien ne va plus, mesdames et messieurs, rien ne va plus. Le numéro 7, rouge, impair, passe, première colonne, première douzaine.
Is that yours?
Non, monsieur.
The croupier calls over a security man to pick up the white envelope on the floor behind him.
It belongs to the director general.
Mais il est à la table du chemin de fer.
He takes it across to the director's table.
Excusez-moi, monsieur.
All, monsieur.
Yes, yes.
What is it?
That is from a check room.
You can reclaim the casino's property with this stud. Who gave you this?
It was on the floor, Excellency. The table 3.
Faites vos jeux.
Monsieur, please. Bah, fetch whatever it is. Hein?
Oui, monsieur.
Monsieur, I said please. It is bad luck.
Raymond.
Your pardon, Excellency, but my secretary has been having dizzy spells all evening.
The security man returns, carrying Melanie's case.
All, monsieur?
Yeah.
The croupier plays all of Paul's chips.
A cheap suitcase?
Oui.
Very well, take it to my office.
Oui, monsieur.
Excusez-moi,
excellence.
Monsieur le dit. Comment
vous?
Raymond, attend me.
Oui, monsieur.
Faites vos jeux. Faites vos jeux, mesdames et messieurs.
Let's go.
S'il vous plaît, faites vos jeux. Oh, monsieur, monsieur.
Your wager.
That's mine?
Well, you said all, monsieur. Les jeux sont faits, mesdames et messieurs. Les jeux sont faits. Rien ne va plus, mesdames et messieurs. Rien ne va plus. Le numéro 7. Rouge, impair, passe. Première douzaine, première colonne.
They've won a huge amount of money.
Mademoiselle,
I have always said that honesty is the best policy. Monsieur, s'il vous plaît, peu la personne.
Oh, merci beaucoup, monsieur. Pour la cagnotte. Faites vos jeux, mesdames et messieurs, s'il vous plaît. Faites vos jeux.
Paul tips the croupier, then he and Melanie leave the table arm in arm. The end.